This is Rewired Radio with Erica Spiegelman, addiction and wellness specialist, motivational speaker, and author, helping individuals, couples, and families regain a sense of control, leading to personal growth, wellness, and a more fulfilling life. Here's Erica Spiegelman.
Welcome, everyone. We all use our phones for pretty much everything today, like sending messages, making phone calls, playing games, even dating. And now we can use them to help us fight drug and alcohol addiction. My guest today, Dr. Harold Jonas, is a psychotherapist who has created award-winning mobile apps dedicated to helping people stay sober and prevent relapses. Dr. Jonas will talk about what drove him to develop mobile apps and how those are really focused on treating addiction. He's also here to discuss the science behind his most recent app, FlexDeck, which is specifically designed to combat our growing opiate addiction epidemic in this country. Dr. Jonas, I'm so honored to have you with me today and excited to talk about all of this with you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Erica, for the invitation and the opportunity to talk about the mad addiction.
Well, I'm happy to talk about it, everything, because you have such an array of projects and things going on. But most importantly, I think, you know, you're moving with the times. And my second book is about kind of how technology is shaping our world and our integrity in a lot of ways. And I just love it how you have embraced, you know, the move towards technology and how we can use it to actually help people. So could you discuss a little bit how this got started for you and what exactly it is you do?
Sure, thank you. And the opportunity again. Back in 2000, technology still was in its infancy. I started a directory back then called sober.com, which was an online directory for families to find their best clinical and financial fit. And this is in the very, very beginning of the internet kind of boom. We sold advertising, and this is pre-Google, to the industry. And from there, we wanted to attract more visitors. And as a trained clinician, my goal was to be able to reach more people and get more people to visit. So we started to train and provide recovery coaching services. And this is dating back to 2004 to 2005. And we're starting to do internet services back then and telehealth in the very, very premature stages. So from there, as things evolved and the advertising model changed, to stay current with the times, we started to take the sober systems, is what I called it back then, and went mobile and started the program in 2011 to get onto people's phones, because we saw that the phone was going to go everywhere with everybody, and that was going to be the new technology. So we revamped the sober systems and the coaching and started to put it onto the apps and onto the phones, and we called it FlexDeck. So it would be very generic on people's devices, so the icon, when they decide to lose their phone or have it laying around, nobody would really recognize that they're using a wellness app or something about recovery. It's kind of a generic word deliberately designed that way.
So what exactly does FlexDeck provide for people if they were to download this app? What kind of is it a daily reminder of things? Is it keeping track of your, you know, self-care? What is it exactly, so our listeners understand?
Well, the intent is to help provide people with a level of accountability. So what we are, if you would think, an alarm company for people. So we install survey items on the app, and they answer the survey items, and the intent is if they adhere to their levels of answering on a daily basis or every 2 or 3 days, whatever that threshold is, if they choose not to, for whatever reason, not answer the survey items, it will trip an alarm to everybody in their support network and to us as the supervising or the monitoring agency, so to speak, to let us know that that person is then at risk for going off the track of their path of wellness. And this app can be used, originally designed through my expertise in addictions and recovery, but also can be used for other medical and or behavioral health diagnoses.
Well, yeah, I mean, it could lead to like having a doctor being notified if you don't do your diabetes. I mean, there's so many obviously different things you could do with it. But it sounds like in terms of, you know, I am on the front lines and I'm counseling people on a daily basis and families and couples, individuals around addiction and recovery and, you know, people in kind of more the aftercare stage. Where do you see like your ideal demographic? Is it people that are just out of treatment? You know, because there's really not a lot of aftercare or accountability, like you said, unless you're going to a sober living or unless you're have a coach. But I mean, those things are not always realistic for everybody.
Exactly. And so what we do is propose it to the treatment center industry on the private side to license it. We're able to brand it. It's a white label app. So we're able to brand it directly to the treatment center so they can use it for their continuing care needs and have people move right through the continuum, because now people are using their phones right in the treatment settings. So we put we try to encourage people, you know, discharge starts when they get admitted. So, you know, as a clinician and having worked in those facilities, I know that aftercare is often an afterthought. And it's a voluntary thing. So we really want to encourage people, because recovery starts when they get out of treatment, not when they're in the institution. So we really want to give them a chance to tether their client base to their continuing care, their alumni group. So it's used as a database kind of build. And alumni events, we have a number of features on the app, including this accountability component. There's, you know, a resource file, for instance. There's an ability for the clients to set goals. There's an ability for them to find meetings. They can have interactive chat with the agency or designed at set times. They can talk to each other. So we can close it off for the agency or open it to the public, however people want to actually use it. And the threshold that I talked about can be changed from a 0 or 1 day threshold for high-risk people in terms of their acuity. And then as they move through the continuum and get more committed to of staying responsible and taking care of themselves, we can flex it out to being, you know, they only have to check in every 10 days, for instance. So it's only three times a month. So there's an intensity kind of continuum that the agencies can set for themselves. So we put a lot of customized features in the back end for them administratively to really get the maximum value out of it for them and for, most importantly, the client user who's really looking to the facility as their anchor. I mean, the longer they stay connected with that facility, statistically, the more likely they are to stay on that path of recovery. When they cut them loose and ship them across the country, is what I've seen, then they lose them and they're just busy filling their beds. And that's just really not in anybody's best interest. We really want to keep that client in that path of connectivity with the agency, with their coach, with their case manager, with their therapist, with their probation officer, with their family, and their loved ones, so they can be held accountable. Because left to their own devices, we all know what happens. That's how they got there.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's such a beautiful, wonderful idea. I'm just so grateful that you actually you've done this. Because I know that, you know, like you said, it's really the routine should be started in treatment. And I've worked at so many treatment centers where, you know, the routines not necessarily are implemented right away. And that's just, I mean, for me, I know that the pathways are the one things that we have to rely on to change, and we have to create new ones. And so with that being said, a routine is everything. And to get somebody on a routine, even involving this app, learning how to get comfortable with it, learning how to, you know, I mean, not that I want everyone on their phones every minute, but I mean, people are. So
and it doesn't take that long to do this check-in. It's a 6-question survey item, and they click yes, yes, yes. And the whole intent is if they don't check in, then, you know, it's not a long, lengthy clinical tool, because we really want them connecting with people, not with technology. I mean, that's the intent. It's just like, I don't want to say an electronic kind of monitoring, but that's essentially what it is. And so if they don't adhere, or if they cross that threshold, like somebody crosses the front door of your home with the alarm system on, it's going to trigger that alert, and then everybody's going to get notified. And, oh, it's a false alarm. I'm fine. I just forgot. But, no, I'm in trouble. I need help. Can you talk to me? Can you come and see me? Can you know, I come into your office and visit with you to help me get right before I go wrong, you know, and undo things that I just invested in, all this time, all this money, all this insurance reimbursement, all this heartache. I don't want to do that again. Let's correct that, you know, and it's a process. We all know it's a process, and they're not going to do it, you know, on it. But we want to create that new norm, and this is now part of the new norm, especially with the millennial generation, which leads me to this whole MAT thing with you know, we created this app for a SAMHSA response for opioid epidemic. So we now created an app just for medication-assisted treatment with the survey items for the consumers. And what we're doing with this particular edition, because it's a different model, is giving out free rewards and giving them free recovery coaching, professional recovery coaching, as a reward for being compliant.
And for the people that don't really...
If they don't have anybody, we're going to let them select somebody and give them free professional coaching. So they need that person. They need somebody in their corner.
So this is an incentive for them to add this kind of daily routine using the Mat Edition, or I'm sorry, so people that understand this language, using the app, okay, using this version of the app. Yeah. That's incredible. And let's just touch upon this epidemic really quick of the opiate addiction. Not only is it heroin, but it's all these prescription drugs that are being prescribed by doctors and being prescribed and sold on the streets now. And for anybody that is listening, most people that do listen understand what's going on to a degree. But for some people that don't understand, can you talk a little bit about how you have now focused on this opiate addiction epidemic and devastation? Mm-hmm.
Sure. The data is just really overwhelming, and it's happening every day in everybody's hometown now. The generation from 18 to 24. You know, you can track it back. Oh, it's interesting because my theory about how people get addicted to opiates may or may not meet the mainstream kind of data research. But you know, adolescents are introduced to opiates when they get their wisdom teeth taken out. Uh-huh. And that's where it starts. They get addicted. They don't get addicted, but they get introduced to the pleasurable sensation of Percocet or painkillers. Because, you know, and that's a genuine pain response from having your wisdom teeth taken out. And we're talking, you know, predominantly white middle-class kids who, you know, have impacted wisdom teeth maybe more so than other socioeconomic brackets, or they have the ability to get treatment. They get introduced to opiates and, you know, take one every 4 hours, becomes two every 2 hours. And the next thing you know, they're looking in other people's medicine cabinets for more. Because opiates make you feel good. I mean, they just make you feel good. That's what they're designed to do. And they do that, and they fool you into thinking things don't hurt. And then it just evolves from there, where they're, you know, buying and selling and going to the farm parties and so forth during that experimental phase in high school. And it just spirals out of control relatively quickly. They may even carry that into their first or second semester of college and come undone. And then they're in treatment, and now they're, you know, have traded in the farm, the pharmaceuticals, and been able to get Percocet or Vicodin or hydrocodone on the street because the DEA has kind of limited supplies. In the heart of the pill mill epidemic back a few years ago that was, you know, broadcast nationally. It was just out of control. You know, people coming from all over the country to Florida, where I live, to have liberal scripts and go from doctor to doctor to doctor in one day and load up a carload of pills and take them back to wherever they came from. So, you know, it infiltrated the country, and now people are really struggling with, you know, finding a way to keep their opiate addiction going. So now they're going in to get heroin, which has now gotten, you know, kind of corrupted with the fentanyl. And the analogs and the fentanyl analogs that are getting imported from China, and people are really getting addicted chemically very, very quickly. Within 3 to 5 days, a neurochemical system is bonded to the opiate, and then they're in trouble. And most recently, you know, one of the things that people talk about when they're using drugs on the street is like, this stuff is so good, it'll stop a house, it'll stop a truck, it'll knock down an elephant. And sure enough, they brought in the elephant tranquilizers on the street. In this whole carfentanil kind of analog that they're using recreationally, which is not designed for people. It's an animal tranquilizer, and people are dying. You know, they're dying at rapid rates. And so SAMHSA, and of course the Office of National Policy Drug Control from the White House, you know, earlier this year, they mandated that people getting public funding have to open up different pathways for treatment, and MAT, or medication-assisted treatment, is one of those new pathways, which involves Suboxone, or shall we say buprenorphine, however that's going to be administered. Methadone is starting to make a resurgence in the industry. Other alternatives, whether it's just naloxone as a method to help deter people from using, are all now mandated if you want to maintain your funding to give people that option. You don't have to have that. You have to have it in your basically menu of services that you offer. So, you know, with that, they need an app to be able to monitor the compliance with the medication. Thus, the reason that we created the Mat Edition.
Wow, that's so interesting. And it's so, I mean, now seeing it from a larger picture of explaining it, it's very helpful for people that you know, I mean, so many people get bits and pieces of this and really actually don't understand the strength and dangers of just some of these drugs. I mean, basic dangers. I mean, people have no idea that it's physically that addictive. And also, I don't think people, I mean, I know that there's a lot of young kids that I see on the front lines that have talked about how this heroin now is cut with the fentanyl, and how all these heroin addicts actually want it. They're looking for it because of the crazy high they do get, which is insanity. But it's that is what, like, is running the streets right now. And I know that that is something where I know they don't understand really what is in the drugs they're putting in their systems. They understand the effects of it, but they don't understand it from a biological point of view. And that's why so many people are dying. I mean, so many people are dying. We've lost, you know, I think about 4 people this month that have gone through our treatment center, you know, so it's devastating. Yeah.
Well, in where I live, in our little community of Delray Beach, Florida, we had 88 incidents of overdose of calls to 911 in the month of October, and either between 8 and 12 deaths in the month, and that's 10% of the calls. So, you know, that's almost 3 a day where they're going out to administer naloxone, which is getting cost prohibitive for emergency service personnel. And that leads me to the new app we just submitted into another contest for the Food and Drug Administration. They wanted a mobile response for responders to administer naloxone as Good Samaritans. So, you know, the agencies in Washington are actually paying attention to this very closely. We did submit another app. We call that Responder. That's the new app that we just put into that contest, and we'll call you back after we win this one here at the end of the year, because we're pretty confident that our response is really along the lines of what they're looking for. So we're all excited about that. I'll be glad to send you the video that we submitted so you can get a look-see of how what's happening. It's kind of like an Uber-fied response, and it's all part of our suite of apps and response to substance abuse in general in our country, as well as the particular drug of choice being the opiates. You know, and that's what really has to be. There's the Mad Addition and now the Responder, because naloxone is going to, you know, you're going to have it in your pocketbook soon, because you're going to be walking down the street and people are going to drop right in front of you. That's what's happening where we live at Dunkin' Donuts. They just fall right over, and like the clerks are going to be running out to administer naloxone because EMS is too far away, which is like 500 yards. That's how powerful. They're not even getting the needle out of their arm in the bathroom of Dunkin' Donuts before they die. It shuts down our nervous system. That's how powerful fentanyl is. It's 100 times more powerful than the street heroin and usually the pharmaceutical hydrocodone. So, I mean, that's pretty strong. That's pretty strong when you just tell your central nervous system that, you know what, you don't really need to breathe. It's too much effort. Just close your eyes. Just close your eyes. And you don't even – they wake up. What do? They want to go get more.
Right.
Because there's no imprint. You know, like when there's a DUI event – oftentimes it'll give people a period of lucidity, and when they wake up from having their car driven into a tree and they're bleeding and they're like, oh my God, what did I do? When they're on opiates, they wake up, they don't even know what hit them. There's no imprint.
There's no imprint of the experience of the episode. Right.
Nothing. Now the receptors are clean from the naloxone, and they just get up and like, thank you very much, and they just go about their business, which includes going to get more.
Wow. So how do we change this? I mean, how do we change from seeing the negative consequences? Like you said, movies
of the people laying in the bathroom. You know, people have their phones and taking videos and showing, like, this is your life. This is your life.
Right.
You know,
right.
I took a picture of a guy on a park bench this morning. I took a morning walk every day because I live in paradise here. And I walk to the ocean and do my meditation and stuff. And there's people that are living on our benches on the side of that. You can look it on my Facebook. You'll see it there. And I can relate because I used to live on that bench. Well, not this one in Delray. I lived on a different bench. In Camden, when I was actively busy undoing my life, younger days, and I know what that's like, and I know how hopeless people feel. Thus, the reason to provide them coaching and support, and make that person and that somebody that's going to be a cheering entity for them to say, "Yes, you can do this, and you're important, and you matter. You matter, and your efforts matter." That's important for people.
Thank God for you for doing that. Yeah, for sure.
So that's where we're going philosophically. That's what's driving me. Because when I was out there doing that, I didn't feel like I mattered, and I felt hopeless. And it wouldn't have mattered if I died with a needle in my arm or wherever I had put it that day. But when somebody's going to call me up and say, "Hey, you doing okay? I noticed you didn't check in today." Suddenly, it could change that just for that split second, and maybe somebody will make an effort to do something better for themselves.
Absolutely. And I think it also it makes you feel like you're being seen and that someone could relate to you or somebody actually cares enough to relate to you. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, I think that's why there's so many people out there that have changed their lives, myself included, that are doing things now to really, like, you know, extend that teaching or extend the hand or extend the experience or extend the help in some way. And so I just think it's just going to continue and continue to just become, you know, worse and worse and worse right now, because there's not a lot, like you said, there's not a lot of awareness around the negative consequences. I mean, I think that's why people say to me, why is heroin such a hard thing to beat? I mean, there's, you know, is it worse than alcoholics? Is it worse? You know, everyone asks that question. And I just think that, you know, like you were saying before, they may not see themselves in the same light as somebody that does get a DUI or that by accident yells at someone or hits somebody and then has to sit mm-hmm. with that shame. It's like immediately as soon as like the shame or the betrayal or the hopelessness kicks in, it's numbed out automatically again, just like if anything else. But for some reason, this heroin epidemic is something where people are just not learning. They're just not there seems to be no awareness around it.
Well, no, certainly not like it isn't with other drug use. And again, yeah. the numbing piece is really, really what's important, is because as soon as, you know, what drives heroin addiction is the fear of withdrawal. And
right,
that's what
absolutely.
Really drives people to continue to use. It's not about getting high anymore. It's about not getting in the getting sick,
about
or
functioning.
Dope sick or being, and functioning right. and not, you know, so whatever that functioning level is, whether it's, you know, panhandling right. or going to a real job, you know, doing something productive or whatever, but they're numbing everything out. I mean, there is no mood swing. I mean, they talk about antidepressants numbing you out and zombifying your moods and your feelings, but the same thing with other substances that are not prescribed by doctors. But the opiates do that. They just numb you out, and nothing really matters. It doesn't matter if you eat or whether you sleep or anything, mm-hmm. because right. you're just kind of coasting along. And the whole goal is to, like, not be dope sick. And the anxiety that goes with that. So then, of course, the benzodiazepines, you know, the Xanax, the Klonopins, they're also very popular. They've always been popular.
That's even more addictive.
Oh, my God. And they've always been popular with the methadone clinics, because it boosts the methadone high. You know, that's what they do in line. And they trade, you know, they trade their doses for benzos, you know, because, right. again, people, they still want to have that boost of euphoria, because, again, the opiates kind of, like, keep you so flat. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's that numbing kind of thing that lasts a long time. So
yeah.
that's the status.
Dr. Jonas, I just want to ask you your opinion on that. So for people that are interested in looking at treatment centers that provide or treatments in general that provide Suboxone or some kind of maintenance for them to wean off their opiate of choice. Mm-hmm. Do you see if you are comfortable sharing your opinion, I'd love to know if you think that is something
well,
that's helpful.
Well, I'm a harm reduction guy. I'm a harm okay. reduction guy, because that's what you're okay. talking about. My attitude is whatever yeah. pathway works for that individual is not for right. me to interfere with, because abstinence is not going to be for everybody forever. That's what we're experiencing now with the new generation mm-hmm. that we're seeing coming out of treatment.
But these young people, someone who's 23, like maybe they stay on Suboxone for a couple months to make sure that they don't, you know, feel like panicked. And then get off of it. I mean, how long should people that are in their prime of their life, or even before the prime of their life, in the beginning of their life, how long should they even stay with these poisonous drugs still pumping through their system, even if it's just regulating their blood in their,
right.
you know?
Well, again, you know, the Suboxone maintenance, or the protocol for Suboxone, when I was an advocate for it, when it first really started to hit the mainstream, when the manufacturer was recruiting doctors and so forth, because uh-huh. it was still... unknown, basically. It was methadone, yeah. and then there was, you know, another brand of naloxone out there, and that was it. And then the tablets came out for Suboxone, and they went into 6-month to 12-month protocol and a slow taper off, because what people are experiencing is that when they get down to a 2-milligram dose of Suboxone, they get very anxious in their brain. They
yes.
don't acclimate quickly, and then they go back to using again and or increase
right.
their dose. So it really needs a lot of support, thus the coaching. Even though the manufacturer has a site and they, you know, have, but they're not really actively with the coaching
no.
and so forth.
Right.
You know, that's not, they're not in that business. That's not their business. That's my business.
Right.
And people like right. me to deal with that. But I'm a very strong advocate of helping people identify their most comfortable pathway, because, again, to rip them off of everything is not for everybody.
Right.
And they're not successful, and then we have to redefine what success is, and, you know, there's so many different variables and answers to this question, because, you know, recovery was based on how long you were abstinent, and that made you successful, and that's just not true. Because if people are improving the quality of their life, you got marijuana being legalized throughout every state in the country soon. Alcohol is already legal, and there's a lot of people in different marijuana maintenance programs. And they're not using their drug of choice, shall we say, whether that be cocaine, which is, of course, very popular, or opiates. But they're functioning, and they're not getting arrested, and they're going to work, and they're putting money in the bank, and they're being productive. Who are we, or who am I to say that, hey, you should stop all of that? It's not my job. My job is to help you improve the quality of your life, improve your marriage, improve your sex life, improve your diet, and have a good time, because, you know, life is short. You know, 80 years blows by, you know, pretty quickly, and you don't want to be fighting it all the time. It just takes all the fun out of it.
Absolutely, so, absolutely. And that comes from, I love it. And that's very similar to mine. And it's just because I think everyone is in an individually, everyone should be individually concerned with themselves. Everyone's lives are different. Everyone's traumas and past and present. And so with that being said, I think their path to sobriety or path to recovery should be different too. And I just, you know, that's why I'm a big believer in kind of creating your own recipe for sobriety, because, you know, the old systems of saying everybody get on one boat and everybody ship out, you know, that's not necessarily going to. No, it has not worked. It has not worked. Nope. And so, yeah, I really love what you're doing and appreciate you adding this wonderful app to the mainstream. And so how do people find it? Can you tell everybody how they find it?
Sure,
and yeah.
So it's designed for iOS, which is your Apple products, as well as for Android. So you can go to either the Play Store for Android or the App Store for Apple. Download one of two editions currently in the market. One is FlexDeck Wellness Edition. And the other one
let's spell that really quick. So it's
FlexDeck, FlexDeck, and it's the wellness management model or the Matt edition. They're both free to download. To use the wellness model, you know, again, we give you a 10-day free trial, and then we ask you to put in your credit card, and then we act as your monitoring agency, just as you would like with any other alarm company, shall we say. And then we're able to be a part of your network and support group and help walk you through how to get the maximum benefit of using the tool. The agencies, again, any agencies that are listening or directors that are interested in licensing the Wellness or Matt Edition, we're able to do that and brand it for your agency.
I appreciate you being with me. It's FlexDeck, FlexDeck.net.
Dot net.
And again, Dr. Harold Jonas, thank you so much for being with us. You're listening to Rewired Radio on Radio MD. I'm Erica Spiegelman, and stay well.